You mean like sort of on?
I guess I love you.
Imagine a new
you. You haven't lost your touch.
You mean like sort of on?
It's hard to believe the drama is over.
I see you haven't lost your touch.
You mean like sort of on?
I guess I love you.
It's hard to believe the drama is
you
over.
You haven't lost your touch.
Well, that's all the scripted stuff.
Hi, I'm Robert Ballantyne, and welcome to the second edition of Pop Journalism, a show that takes a look at the media and pop culture. On this week's show, we have a special all about the internet. Now, the internet is tricky to put on the radio, because a lot of what we do on the internet is silent. And if the internet does make a sound, it's usually something repetitive, like this. But we're going to give it a try anyway. Coming up this hour, we'll take an irregular look at the news in our Week in Review. Also, we'll have an interview with Simon Jennings of Yahoo Canada, talking about pop-up ads. We'll also talk with David Perry, an antivirus expert with Trend Micro, who talks about computer virus hype and how it's used to sell product. Of course, we'll have a mix of music and maybe a few surprises in between. Stick around, we'll be right back.
We'll be right back. And good morning. Hi, I'm Robert Valentine. Welcome to the second edition of Pop Journalism, like I said in the intro. It's June 23rd, 2002, and it looks like it's going to be a really warm day today. It's supposed to be 32 degrees, hot and humid, and of course there's going to be smog and high UV, but right now it's hazy and 20 degrees. We're going to start the weekend review this week. We started a little late. We got a lot to cover, so we'll just go right into the segment. We have three news magazine segments this week, one about the G8, and also one about the new show, American Idol. If you haven't seen that show yet, I'll explain it in just a bit. So here we go with the week in review. It's almost time. The G8 Summit is about to take place in Kananaskis, Alberta. Next week from June 26th to 27th, leaders of the world's wealthiest nations will gather for an informal meeting to discuss the world's problems. The leaders of the G8 are from France, Germany, the US, the United Kingdom, Japan, Italy, Russia, and of course, Canada. On with the story. For the past 28 years, the leaders of the world's most powerful nations have been gathering together once a year. But for the past 3 years, anti-globalization protests have been marked with increasing violence and charges of police brutality. The most infamous of these events occurred during last year's G8 in Genoa, Italy. During that summit, a protester was shot dead by police, and more than 231 people were injured in 2 days of violence. Most of the 280 people arrested at the event were freed, but damage from the violence was estimated at over $45 million. This year, in the shadow of the events of September 11th, security has been stepped up. It's estimated that the Canadian government is going to spend $500 million on G8-related security. Maude Barlow of the Council of Canada broke the cost down in an Ottawa news conference earlier this week.
Here they will seal themselves inside a military fortress that is going to cost the Canadian taxpayers $16 million an hour.
Federal Justice Minister Martin Cochon responded to criticism that Canada's G8 security preparations are too costly.
I do believe that we have to proceed on a case-by-case basis, and it's always a question of balance approach.
Yes, $500 million worth of balance. But the money's going to be spent regardless of protests and the whining of pundits. So stand up, Canada. Face the inevitable. Be proud. We're the hosts of the G8 Summit.
Okay, what are you going to sing?
I'm going to sing Knockin' the Boots by H-Town.
Verse and a chorus, please.
Oh, come on. Come on to the last jam and let me get on it. Because when I do, just me and you, it'll be so right. Yeah, yeah.
That was just the sound of Stephanie, one particularly ill-fated auditioner vying to become an American Idol. American Idol is a new TV reality show concept imported from Britain, now airing in North America on Fox and Global. The concept is pretty straightforward. Singers and dancers audition in hopes of becoming a solo pop star complete with a recording contract. A panel of three music industry professionals judges the performers and whittles down the list to one. One of those judges is even a former pop star herself, Paula Abdul.
Wow, Paula.
Well, you are very, very outgoing, and you woke us up, that's for sure.
Good morning.
I personally don't feel that you're the next American Idol.
And Paula's the nice one. Along the way, more embarrassingly awful singers get their dreams crushed by the other two blunt judges making up the panel.
When you entered this competition, did you really believe that you could become, you're standing on now, the American Idol?
Yes, sir.
Well, then you're deaf.
But while the American Idol concept is new to North American television, the internet has its own version. On Yahoo, they operate a voice chat system, and one of the chat rooms is for karaoke. We here at Pop Journalism eavesdropped, and it's just as brutal as any American Idol competition or Hollywood audition.
Someone I don't know.
Please stop. You're really crap.
And I wish on a star that somewhere you are, you'll never find so high. You gotta go find your shining star.
Sorry. If you're the stranger to me, that you're the only one for me, for
you sing like my dog.
So that's the internet competition for you. But what about Stephanie? Well, Stephanie just wouldn't take no for an answer and went back to the judges.
I don't know if I made it or not because they didn't say come to Hollywood.
Hello?
Do you have a twin?
I was just curious if I did make it, if I'm coming to Hollywood, because I think I have what it takes.
We said no.
Yeah, but why?
Because you're not good enough.
Because you're not good enough. You're not a good singer at all.
Oh, hell no. See, the thing is, I'm right here because I'm the whole package right here. I got the looks, I got the style, and I'm the next Tina Marie or the Stephanie Sugarman right here. Let me tell you. Good loving body, rockin' knockin' boots all night long. Making love into a
well, I guess she's auditioning all over again.
Stephanie. Okay. Stephanie.
It's okay.
Listen, honey. Okay. Auditions, you either get it or you don't. And you you go on to the next audition.
I will.
See you later,
and
Stephanie. You won't be coming to Hollywood. See you later.
I will be coming to Hollywood, and I'll see you, and my millions are going to be there.
And also this week, you may have heard Ann Landers, the columnist, whose snappy, plain-spoken, and timely advice helped millions of readers deal with everything from birth to death, died Saturday. She was 83. She died from complications from bone marrow cancer, and it was less than 2 weeks before her July 4th birthday. Her column first appeared in print on October 16th, 1955, in the Chicago Sun-Times. In 1993, she was the world's most widely syndicated columnist, appearing in more than 1,200 newspapers worldwide, with 90 million readers daily. Her twin sister Pauline followed her into the profession as a writer of the Dear Abby column. Every year there's a new one. Most livable U.S. city, friendliest city, town with the best manners. And now comes the first annual Sweatiest City Award. The top honors go to San Antonio, Texas. On a typical summer day, San Antonio residents lose more than 1 liter of perspiration per hour during routine exercise such as walking. Dallas, Fort Worth, New Orleans, Houston, and West Palm Beach, Florida, flushed out the top 5 sweatiest cities. The list was released on Thursday by Procter & Gamble's Old Spice Red Zone deodorant to sweat up some first day of summer publicity. What the PR people won't do. And, finally, supermodel Cindy Crawford said Thursday she was considering taking a multi-million dollar trip into space with Russian cosmonauts. Crawford said she would only go if she could, quote, go there and be back in a week. Ah. You may also remember NSYNC band member Lance Bass is due to be sent off the planet next October. We can only hope this is the start of a list of annoying celebrities sending off the planet. My top 5 list starts with Michael Jackson, followed by Carrot Top, and Fox's News' Bill O'Reilly, the cast of Friends, of course the rest of NSYNC, and also on the list is Will Smith, Britney Spears, Nicolas Cage, all Much Music VJs.
Whenever I'm down, I call on you, my friend, a helping hand you lend in my time of need. Whenever I'm down, I call on you, my friend, I call on you, my friend, I call on you, my friend.
Listen.
I call on you,
you again now if you're still listening there. If you're driving into town with a dark cloud above you, dialing the numbers bound to lie out. If you're lying on the beach with the transistor going, kick off the sand flies, honey, the love's still flowing. If your head says forget it, but your heart's still smoking, call me at the station, the lights are open.
It's hard to believe the drama is over.
I see you haven't lost your touch.
Pop journalism.
Internet pop-up advertising has become a standard on the web. But it wasn't always like this. As early as last year, the idea of pop-up ads floating all over pages like the New York Times or Billboard.com was unimaginable, something left for more illicit sites like MP3 or porn sites. But pop-up ads have become mainstream. They're intrusive, and they're getting even more so. Now there's flash animation, there's movies, there's sound that bombards you as soon as you enter a webpage. It blocks the content and just annoys people. What's the future of online advertising? In order to answer this question, I spoke with Simon Jennings a few weeks ago. He's the sales manager with Yahoo Canada.
What types of online advertising are used, let's say, on the main Yahoo Canada page, yahoo.ca?
The front page of Yahoo Canada offers non-traditional or non-banner advertising opportunities. We have two large formats, one known as a mantle and one known as a marketplace, in which advertisers tend to implement new technologies, flash, basically moving pictures and all video, etc., to entice consumers to look at the ads.
Okay, so there's the new type of flash ads that are kind of, they take up your whole screen and sort of, or they bounce around the screen, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, they're a little more intrusive, taking into consideration also the user experience, which we don't want to upset the user. But yes, they are non-conforming, non-typical ads that may float in from one side, take up a large portion of the screen, do something, and then dissipate into a corner or into one of these other spaces. It's very eye-catching, and you can do a lot more creatively with the message.
So those are kind of new. Why are they becoming more common?
Natural evolution of the industry and of technology and of bandwidth. The size of how much information the consumer can actually see through their computer through the internet has increased. So the evolution of ads and technology has also moved a great deal down the road, simply because the weakest link can now see them.
There's sort of a new phenomenon. Pop-up ads were starting to go on Yahoo, and that's fairly new too.
It's new for us. It isn't really new. It actually has been available for about 3 years. What you're seeing is now the acceptance of marketers to actually try the new technologies and the new ad sizes and strategies.
So there was that X camera or something that everyone sort
of... The
X10. Right.
Yeah, the X10 pop under.
Personally, I see that and click it off right away. I mean, how effective are, let's say, pop-ups?
They're quite effective. The marketer and the site, certainly in Yahoo's case, has to take into consideration the user experience. So you don't want to inundate people with them, or ultimately you'll have a negative response from the advertiser. But, the example of that camera company is that it seems no matter where I go, everyone talks about it. So whether they like it or not, a company has built probably one of the most powerful brands in growth over the last 6 months, simply because there isn't a person out there that doesn't know what you're referring to when you speak of that camera company.
So what's wrong with just the plain old banner ads that were around years ago? Why aren't those enough?
Well, it's not really a matter of them being enough. They are a very effective tool for a branding initiative. And remember, advertising is about subconscious branding as well as conscious branding. So they work very well, but in any medium, we need to see more, and the envelope needs to be pushed. And in the internet, and certainly with Yahoo, we're offering, we're trying to lead the industry. We continue to lead the industry in offering the next step, the next rung on the ladder. And in order to continue the growth of the medium, it makes sense to offer new opportunities, new technologies, and push them forward.
The prominence of ads, and they're becoming more intrusive than they used to be, is that due to the dot-com bubble bursting and advertising is getting more aggressive because the money's more needed?
No, there's certainly no correlation between what happened in the dot-com fallout and the new technologies. In Yahoo's case, we're, again, extremely optimistic about the advertising world in general. We see our numbers are up quarter to quarter. Our guidance has been raised. And the new technology is simply, indicative of what this medium is. It is based on a technology platform. And technology grows, and we grow with it. And our job is, at Yahoo, is just to lead the industry.
And just one last question. Is there a saturation point with ads? Like, you were mentioning that, you don't want to overflood the content. What would be sort of that median range there? When will it be enough?
I think in any medium, television, radio, print, and the internet, there is always going to be a point of saturation. Common sense, I think, will dictate that. At Yahoo, we are extremely concerned with our user experience, and our users will let us know when they've seen enough, and we'll have to look at that when it happens.
So you haven't reached that yet?
Certainly not. I don't think that advertising has reached a point of saturation in any media, really. Perhaps, maybe broadcast, but I don't think it actually has reached saturation. And even in broadcast, they have got considerably smarter about the way they present ads now.
So basically, this sort of advertising, you're learning as you go along what's enough, what's not enough, or what's the right point?
Yes, we are still learning. Again, we are in a leadership position, and we continue. I think we have a pretty good understanding of the balance between the needs of the marketers and the desires of the consumers. I would suggest that we will probably. I would not advise anybody to get into a position where they affect the consumer experience by just putting so many ads up that you can't get through to the content, but that's just common sense, and I think any smart person in this industry will figure that out.
As well, after the interview with Mr. Jennings, I also spoke with David Crane of Google, the search engine site, and they're one of the few sites on the internet who don't use pop-up ads as a form of revenue. They use text-based ads.
Now, a lot of websites have pop-up ads or other types of forms. Google doesn't. Why?
We actually have never accepted pop-up advertising. In fact, we've never accepted ads that are graphical of nature at all. Google first began running ads on our site in January of the year 2000, and we introduced a text-based advertising format that we have remained loyal to ever since. The primary reason is that we feel that text-based ads load a lot quicker, so they don't slow down the performance of our site. And it's very easy to target text advertising to keywords that users are looking for with our search engine.
Have you had a lot of pressure to have graphical ads on Google?
That's a great question. We've actually had very little pressure at all. Google's advertisements tend to work extraordinarily well. In fact, they perform 4 to 5 times greater than the industry average performance for online advertising. And the performance itself tends to invite our advertisers to focus on a different conversation with us and not one related to, will Google ever accept graphic ads? Our advertisers are very happy with text-based advertising, and a very large percentage of them renew their campaigns.
Why do you think it's more effective than graphic ads?
In the case of Google, our users are looking for information. Their eyes are trained to scan blocks of text for the information they're looking for very quickly. And our users don't want to spend a lot of time on the Google site. They want to find what they're looking for, and they want to move on to those web pages. Our creative format for our ads, they're very, very clearly marked as advertisements, but they're very closely targeted to the information that our users are searching for. So I think it's less the creative format itself and more about the targeting and relevancy of the ads that makes them so useful.
New on CKLN, a show dedicated to exploring our media and pop culture. Hi, I'm Robert Ballantyne, host of Pop Journalism, a mix of music and spoken word, Sundays from 7 to 8 a.m. That's right, Sundays 7 to 8 a.m. And if you can catch the show live, you can always visit the website at popjournalism.com. www.netfirms.com.
All around the cobbler's bench, the monkey chased the weasel. The monkey thought 'twas all in fun. Off goes the weasel. I've no time to wait inside, no patience to wait till by and by. So kiss me quick, I'm off, goodbye. Off goes the weasel. A penny for a spool of thread, a penny for a needle. That's the way the money goes. Pop goes the weasel. You may try to sew and sew and never make something regal. So roll it up and let it go. Pop goes the weasel. All around the cobbler's bench, the monkey chased the weasel. The monkey thought 'twas all in fun. Pop goes the weasel. Pop goes the weasel.
Website is up and running at www.ckln.fm. Check out our new look and new online location. Come back regularly for updates and improvements to our new home on the World Wide Web, ckln.fm.
It's been a while since the last major computer virus outbreak. The last one was last year, when the computer virus known as Code Red infected millions of computer users. Most recently, there have been stories in the media about a new virus outbreak. It's called W32 slash Clez-G. It's a low-risk virus. But the virus made headlines anyway in most technology sections around the world. Helping sell the virus threat were antivirus companies themselves, issuing press releases and spreading the hype. I spoke with David Perry, Global Education Director for Trend Micro, an antivirus software firm that makes PC Cillin. He's worked with computer viruses for 10 years, with most of the major antivirus computer firms. Among the questions I asked him was, do antivirus software companies hype computer threats to sell more products? And really, should computer users be so afraid?
I started off by explaining viruses to people who were afraid of what was happening to their computers, and I believe that the fear is overrated as a constructive force in the world. I think that people are really better served by having an accurate idea of what's going on than by being afraid of computer viruses.
Virus scares are usually leading stories when they hit the newspaper. Why do you think that is?
It's a dramatic situation. It's something that's brand new. There's a sense of imminent danger involved. People are afraid. They are looking at this here. We're finally coming to grips with the idea that information is property, which is very true. Information is property. And here we are, we're looking at our information, which is property, and what we can see from it is that a bored 15-year-old kid halfway around the world can reach his hand into my computer and compromise the security of the data that I have there. Whether we're talking about kids, if indeed we can go on calling them kids, because a lot of them are not children, right? They don't know who I am. They don't care who I am. They're not directly attacking me. Yet the effects of the computer virus can wipe out, you know, the data in my system. So that's a dramatic idea. And in fact, I think the reason that they are so appealing as a news story is that really the whole thing, the whole idea of the computer virus comes to us from fiction. Did you know that there were fictional computer viruses before there were real ones? The computer virus was invented in a novel called Shockwave Rider by John Brunner in 1975. The first real virus wasn't until 1987. It's not surprising that it's a dramatic sort of a thing. You know, 100 million people get the love letter virus on their desktop. The headline news has been in the era since Melissa and Love Letter, when we've had what they call mass mailing worms, which are these, you know, big infestations that actually touch the lives of millions of people. Right now there's a virus out called Clez.G, and I wouldn't have ever reported this thing in the first place. I've talked to a couple of reporters about it because they asked to, but I didn't make one call out to anyone to discuss it whatsoever because it was just not worth it. 25,000 people in 24 hours, that's an infinitesimal fraction of the 300 million computers that are connected to the Internet.
Which part of that is the media and which part is that the software companies that issue press releases on those?
I would say that at this point, I could give equal culpability on this particular virus. I mean, it is spreading a little rapidly. That's interesting to us, you know, but it was really not that strong of an alert. We put it in what we called a medium alert because it was in more than three continents of the world. So there are a number of criteria that it has to meet to be given an alert level. And it was certainly not a red alert at any time. It wasn't anything that we were asking people to do anything proactive to prevent happening on their systems. So the media, gosh, I can't speak for the other antivirus manufacturers in the world, although I have worked for a lot of them over the course of the last dozen years. I can't speak for the media. What I would say is that probably this one was overreported a little bit because it had been a long time since there was a computer virus story, and since we had an infestation here and we had several industry pundits calling it a bad outbreak, that people reacted to it. The media reacted to it. So I would put most of the culpability on this one on other antivirus vendors, but I'm not willing to name them by name. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Is there a correlation when a big virus hits between the sales of antivirus software in the news?
Really, to tell you the truth, the real game in the sales of antivirus software is in the world of corporate America. The retail software really doesn't mean that much to the profitability of any of the big companies in the industry, believe it or not. And what is important is that
all of the people who need, you know, this large scale antivirus protection, it's not a run down to the store and buy it. It's something that contracts are written for and everything, right? So it's really not that big of a deal. And we've been accused in the past that, you know, look, you guys, your stock price goes up. Well, this is true of everything in the world. Your stock price goes up when you're in the news and people pay attention to the business that you're in. Or they will say, well, you know, people are all downloading your pattern file and you make a lot of money off of that. Well, and they, no. People are downloading the pattern file, but the pattern file is a cost to antivirus manufacturers and not a profit generating item. The you buy the antivirus software, you get a whole year of those pattern files, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where is the profit that I get because you're coming to my website and downloading it? There's no real profit motive involved in that per se.
You've worked for other antivirus corporations. Do they sometimes overhype something on purpose?
I think that there have been a lot of people who have overhyped viruses on purpose, a lot of them, not just in the antivirus industry, but people, you know, who work, you know, industry pundits who speak for the whole computer industry, government officials, people in, you know, various educational and other strata where they're, you know, responsible for reporting different sorts of things. Lots of people have overhyped viruses. I remember Code Red. You remember Code Red last year?
Mm-hmm.
I have an article that I you know, downloaded about Code Red where this guy, and I'm not going to say who he is, was up in front of the public saying that this was going to cause the internet to melt down and that the internet was going to go offline. And not only was it going to go offline, it was going to go offline at such and such a date and at such and such a time at like 4:35 in the afternoon on next Tuesday. And I was thinking, like, this is absurd. You know, if you really knew what you were talking about, you wouldn't make such a prediction because even if you knew it, because it could happen a minute later or a minute earlier, you have no idea. You know, you're not in that much control of the situation. Things aren't that. And in fact, the Code Red was not that big of a deal. It did not shut down the internet. It was certainly startling from a new technology point of view. And sometimes that's why people get coverage for new viruses, is that they are interesting new technology. But the media seems mostly interested in the virus as an outbreak phenomena. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, virus as an outbreak phenomena. That means how many thousands of people got this virus right now, you know, on the first day or the first 2 days. And that's what's, as if that's what's important about it. And really, out here in the world of we're counting, you know, what happens with viruses, nobody, and I mean absolutely nobody, knows how many people were infected by any virus ever with any degree of accuracy. Most of the customers don't tell us that they're being infected up front. We do have some customers who tell us. We are able to extrapolate some things from that. But certainly none of our competitors tell us if their customers are infected. We don't tell them. So there's a situation where no one really has the big data. No one knows how many people are infected by this or that virus ever. And as a result, you know, you see people making predictions about, you know, you'll read in the newspaper that, you know, this prediction company or this economic modeling company says that this particular virus cost the world $2.6 billion. And those of us who track these things look at that and say, well, how can they possibly know anything? Not only that, I don't know anybody that they've ever asked, you know, anything. It's a very strange sort of a situation where you've got people making all kind, not just dire predictions and dire things, but people are you know, telling you how much money this particular virus cost the entire world. I don't know how they find that out. I have not one clue how they find that out in the world. And I would like to know, but that might be something that could be considered a sort of hype.
So bug reporting is creating its own industry?
Possibly. There's a very interesting thing. There are bug reports like NT Bug Track in the industry, and you'll see things get predicted in there with enough detail that I'm pretty sure that's where the virus writer is finding the stuff to write down. And then it shows up later as a virus, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it's interesting. My take on this is that the era that we're right in right now, where there's, you know, 15 new viruses every day, and it keeps huge tracts of scientists busy all the time, that's going to close eventually based on three things. First, the software will become, the operating system and applications will be more secure. Second, we'll get security software of all manner, you know, intrusion detection, firewalls, antivirus scanners, content security, built right into, you know, the infrastructure of the internet, and they will be better quality stuff. So they will detect greater quantities of things. You know, the antivirus software of today is vastly appreciated in value over the antivirus software of 10 years ago. The stuff that you use today is very sophisticated software. So as the technology advances and as the actual security of the original software that you're using, the operating system and everything, becomes more secure, and finally, as users become more educated to the idea of data security, because it's the most basic security comes from the idea that information is property, and that's not a universally accepted idea with people yet, I don't believe. So as people, you know, protect the security of their information, as we get better tools, and as we get the infrastructure itself is better protected, I think that you'll find that people are better protected as well.
So despite the fact that sometimes virus threats are overhyped, people shouldn't throw out their antivirus software?
No, of course not. I mean, there's a definite need for protection in the world. What I would say, though, is important is don't panic. You know, this is we actually see a lot of people get into trouble, particularly end users, right, who are convinced that this virus is going to really hurt their computer, so they format their hard drive. We hear this all the time. It's almost never the appropriate reaction to a computer virus to format a hard drive. I've never given that out as a piece of advice to anyone with a virus that I've ever encountered, ever.
It's mostly common sense, right? Update your virus software.
Update your virus. You know what's funny, though, is we say, you know, it made a really glib phrase last year for me to say, don't take candy from strangers. But really, most of those mass mailing viruses of today are not coming from strangers. They're coming from people that you know. So be very careful before opening an attachment that comes on an email.
Why do you think people open those really annoying emails? What is it about, like, when someone says, I love you, they open it up and download an .exe file?
You know, I think that a lot of it is just reflex. I think we train ourselves. I mean, over the years, I have developed lightning typing since, you know, when I was I'm fairly old. I think I'm older than you. I'm 40, going on 48 years old this year. And I learned how to type in high school, and I was no good at it, right? Now that I have to type, you know, all the time, I'm really, really fast typist. The same thing with, I'm a fast mouse guy, and I'm open email very, very rapidly, and it took me some time to develop an instinctual way to open email without automatically opening attachments, and I'm very careful with that, but that's an acquired skill. You know, and I think people have acquired the skill to buzz through their email and click on all the attachments. There's so much baloney that comes in your email. You know, they want to read get-rich-quick schemes and how you can lose 100 pounds in 2 hours and all of the things that come in your email, all of the spam that comes in your email, right? And they're just clicking on things to open it very rapidly. That's what I think. I think it's click without think is what infects most people.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
KLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission to broadcast in stereo at 88.1 MHz on the FM band. CKLN is owned and operated by CKLN Radio Incorporated, which is located at Ryerson University within Jorgensen Hall in Toronto, Canada.
At the time of license application, CKLN filed a comprehensive promise of performance with the Commission. And in that document, CKLN made specific commitments as to its operations and programming. The license issued by the CRTC requires CKLN to honor those commitments made in the promise of performance and to comply with the FM radio broadcasting regulations.
A copy of the license with the promise of performance and conditions of licensing is available for inspection by any member of the public at the offices of the Commission and at the offices of CKLN during business hours. Radio frequencies are public property in Canada, and CKLN invites your comments and inquiries.
Our mailing address is 380 Victoria Street, Toronto, Ontario. Postal code M5B1W7. Phone number 416-595-1477. Thank you for tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM, and good morning.
The drama is over.
I see you haven't lost your touch.
And welcome back. That's our show for this week. If you happen to miss part of the show, you can always go to our website at popjournalism.netfirms.com. As you can see, we're running into Greg's show here a little bit. But if you did happen to miss the show, I do have something ready for you if you happen to miss some of the segments. And it's just a 30-second hit. This is mostly for Greg. I made it for him because he comes in late. And let's just play it here.
Advertising is about subconscious branding as well as conscious branding.
Have you had a lot of pressure to have graphical ads on Google?
That's a great question. That's a great question. That's a great question.
You know, we're trying to lead the industry. We continue to lead the industry. And our job is, you know, at Yahoo is just to lead the industry.
Oh, come on. Come on to the last damn... And let me get on it.
And that was our little show. If that wasn't enough, again, we host the website, and you can listen to the show in complete MP3 streaming audio there. And that's it for me again, and we'll pass it off the International Connection. But just before that, we'll close off with a song and a little bit from American Idol, my favorite piece from the show.
Thank you very much indeed. Cassandra, that was terrible.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean awful. Randy?
If you really, 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 really want this, you should take a lot of lessons and sing for a lot of people.
Actually, Randy, I'm going to disagree there, sorry. Because you have to have a talent to progress it. I don't believe Cassandra has a singing talent. She's completely wasting her money. Honestly, complete waste of money. Sorry. Because if you want to achieve what you want to achieve, you will not do it with your voice. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you a lot. Just the chat.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay. Don't look at me like that.
But you know what? If it's not today, it could be somewhere else, it could be some other time. But it's been an opportunity, you know, and I'm going to work, and I'm going to work even harder now, because you know what? No matter what they say, I'm not going to worry about it.
And I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living. Won't seem to let me in. watch them shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. You're on the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5, what a way.